Oh, hey Jesse, you're here. What's up? How's it going, man?
Hey, good. Thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Of course, it's great to have you a part of the conference, and can't wait for the conversation we're about to have today.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really exciting. Great to see all of you here. Really appreciate it. We see a lot of people here. It's amazing. Appreciate you stopping by.
100%. So, if you are in the audience, we'll be getting started here in a bit. Feel free to ping anyone you think will find any value in the conversation. So yeah, why don't we go ahead and get started? So Jesse, you're from House of NFT and you're from Ghost Market. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in NFTs and got interested in the space?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm not really affiliated with Ghost Market. I don't think officially I guess I started their Telegram music group or whatever. And actually Kind Mantras, who's there in the audience, he is also an admin in that Telegram group. But I actually started back in October of 2019, before I'd ever heard of NFTs or anything like that. I was trying to do some kind of music related startup, and I, had some ideas that probably weren't very good, really. And then in about, I think it was July of 2020, then I first started hearing about NFTs, and I realized, like, okay, now this could really be the kind of thing that could accomplish what I really wanted to do, which is, kind of solve the problem of music not paying enough money for people. I mean, we've seen all these horror stories about what people get with Spotify, and then, of course, with the pandemic, things got really bad with, even the sort of last bastion of income that people had, the live music income, that was disappearing. So, I was really trying to shift into overdrive and find something that could work. And so, when NFTs started popping up on my radar, I realized, okay, now this is actually way better than anything that I was thinking of before. So I started looking into it, and I was surprised that, there really wasn't much at that time in the way of music NFTs. There may be a few people talking about it. I found some people talking about, more like what they were calling audio NFTs at the time, where it was more like, it came with the rights to the audio and you could use it, you'd actually have ownership of it. And I realized that, non-fungible tokens, that's sort of the original idea, is that the token is a token of ownership, and that, what that ownership really means is something that is kind of still being negotiated and playing out in the marketplace. But at the time, I was, just, being involved in the music space, I was realizing, like, if this is going to be a mass market product, if this is going to be something that can really transform music, well, it can't be people just like giving away their rights and everything like that. And so I tried to come up with a plan, a way that we could do all of this. And the other thing that was concerning me at the time was, of course, just the idea that, okay, if I'm going to be telling everybody to go make these music NFTs, I don't want to do a bunch of harm to a population that's already suffered so much, And so I didn't really want to tell everyone to go do this on like an Ethereum-based platform, because it could end up costing people a bunch of money. And maybe, if they didn't sell their NFT or anything like that, it could actually end up, a pretty bad experience, or even have a negative impact on the music community, the things that I was doing. So, I was looking around just to see what the alternatives were. And I came across, it was actually a crypto YouTuber called Hashoshi. I saw his video on this blockchain that was purpose-built for NFTs, and it was specifically actually a gaming blockchain at the time, and it's called Phantasma. And I started looking into it, and I realized, like, okay, like this has massive potential where Ethereum really, in some ways, doesn't, because it was such a tiny, tiny market cap. And I mean, at the time, I think SOL was like 5 cents or something like that, and the supply is less than Ethereum. And so I was thinking, okay, well, like this is a place where we as musicians, if we kind of take this over and make this our place for music, this coin that quite frankly not many people are using, we could really, like, get in on the ground floor and create something where, would have like a Wall Street bets kind of effect on the price of this coin, SOL. And I thought it was cool that the name was SOL and everything. And I looked into it, and they had what I considered to be the best NFT technology, but they hadn't gone live with minting NFTs or any of those types of things at that time, but they were about to. And so I started talking to them like, hey, you know, we need to have like a music category. And the funny thing is, I mean, at the time, nobody was really thinking about that. So they're like, what? And even the marketing director guy for Phantasm, he was like, I don't know, man. You know, I don't think that this is, you know, maybe even a very promising idea, right? You know, and here we are, whatever it is, 6 months later or something. And actually, it's a while, maybe 8-9 months later. You know, and now people, of course, are very accepting of the idea of the music NFT. And I'm happy to say that I think the basic idea that I had that the music NFT would have to be something that was copyrighted, you know, where if you put that copyright notice in, then you retain the rights to the work. And that's really the only way it's going to work. And in the art world, you have most things produced by one person. If they're not by one person, they might be a collaboration of two people or whatever it is. So they only really have to split it two ways and things like that. But in the music world, there are very few things that involve only one person, and most things involve quite a bit more. And so the idea that we can just, you know, just hand over the rights or do any of these things, like, that's almost impossible when you're dealing with all of the types of splits and royalties and different levels of interest or whatever that people would have. And so, you know, the only way to maintain that kind of system is to put that copyright symbol in there to retain your rights to the song and that kind of thing. And then the NFT itself is really a digital collectible, right? It's a piece of music. And so that's why I thought it was appropriate to call that a music NFT as opposed to an audio NFT, because this is more like recorded music. You know, if you look through somebody's CD collection or album collection or whatever it is, every single one of those has a copyright symbol on it. And that's because, you know, if it didn't have that, anyone could just go around and copy those or whatever. And, you know, the whole idea of investing in music or, you know, producers getting a percentage, all of those types of things just wouldn't even come into play. So we couldn't really have the music industry exist without that, you know, copyright information and people protecting their intellectual property.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense, and I'm really glad that you shared how you got started and how you first got into creating music NFTs. So I know that in today's world, like, NFTs are still relatively they're not widely adopted by the entire populace yet. They're still not super mainstream yet, and we're still early adopters in this space. And a lot of artists, they think that they can just, you know, just NFT, they can just mint their record or their song, and that's pretty much all they're doing. So can you talk a little bit about the relationship between NFTs and streaming as well, and how do you see them working in tandem? Do you see them working in relation to one another? How do you see that working out?
Well, that's a good question. And actually, that's kind of foremost on my mind right now, actually. So I'm going to try to answer this without getting too much into the sort of project I'm working on at the moment. But okay, so the NFTs that we have now are sort of, you know, handmade collector NFTs that are made by the artists themselves and that kind of a thing. But we know that Spotify and all these places are hiring blockchain developers, and we know that we've already given them distribution rights over our songs. So I feel like it's only a matter of time until Spotify or someone releases all of our songs as NFTs anyway. And the clock's kind of ticking on that. And part of the reason that they haven't is simply that they don't have the technology, you know, to create, you know, however many millions of NFTs that would be, right? You couldn't possibly do that on Ethereum, but there are platforms where you can. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that's something that we have to be proactive in confronting, and that's something I am working on now, to create some kind of NFT-based streaming service that doesn't, you know, capture all of the profits, but returns, you know, almost entirely all of the profits to the artists. But yeah, I think they can be complementary, but it's going to be a very weird thing how this all shakes out. And I do think that if we leave it up to Spotify or any of these people to try to, you know, create the NFTs based on the distribution agreements that already exist when people sign up from DistroKid or whatever it is, if we allow them to do it, you know, they're going to do it in a way that where they're going to try to capture all of that income from the current types of NFTs or whatever, and they're not going to create something that stays in its own lane that is simply part of the streaming service or whatever. But yeah, I mean, that's been my experience. Everybody's first instinct is to get rid of Spotify. And it was very interesting to me because when I was coming up with this, I wanted to make it easy for people. I wanted to have it be something like, you know, where if you have all of the stuff that you already do with your music, this is just one more thing. It's not going to stop you from uploading your music to DistroKid or wherever and putting it out on every streaming service. It's not going to be something where you couldn't put it in a movie or in a TV show. Because if I'm a buyer, for example, and I do own a lot of music NFTs now, and if I bought your NFT and you got that song into a film or whatever, or it became a big hit, of course, I would want, you know, I want you to do that. I would want that song to get bigger because then I would own the NFT of a song that was bigger. So, you know, I mean, it just makes sense that we should do this. And the way I guess it kind of just made sense to me was the general principle with NFTs is that everyone can enjoy it, but only one person can own it. Or, you know, if you make five, then maybe five people or whatever. But that's the idea. And so with music, we already give it away for free. We already let everyone listen to it for free on YouTube or Spotify or wherever it is. I mean, I guess, you know, it's not technically for free on Spotify, but it's pretty close. And they do have free ad support and whatever. So yeah, we're giving it away for free. And so all we need to do is add that other component and, you know, make it work with our existing ecosystem. And so that's what I kind of wanted to do was, you know, have some kind of template. And actually, I just saw a video from Kind Mantras in the audience there, and he's taking that to the next level. I mean, just... there's sort of this tension between standardization and everybody wanting to be better than everybody else because, you know, we kind of all have an interest in creating a product that is somewhat interchangeable. You know, like if we all can have this thing called a music NFT and we all know that there's a standard for it and it has certain things that we look for and we can compare it on that basis, you know, it's like a CD or a cassette tape, you know, it just has certain attributes, then it becomes a lot easier for the consumer. But then everybody wants their NFT to be way better and have all these different features. And then it becomes difficult, I think, to even value them in the mind of the consumer. It would become difficult to buy, say, 10 of them at once when, you know, you'd have to really study and think about each one and everything. So there is that tension there. And I think, you know, to a certain extent, when it comes to NFTs, we look at the very like simple, standardized offerings where it treats the consumer, you know, a little differently, like the NBA Top Shots or whatever. Like those are the ones that succeed where they keep it really simple. And so I do think there might be some benefit if we can standardize the idea of what a music NFT is for the consumer to eliminate that kind of confusion.
Have you heard of Blue Box by any chance by Ditto?
No, they're a thing like DistroKid, right?
Yeah, so like Ditto, they're like a distribution service, and they, I would just, okay, so the premise of like their Blue Box is what I heard was, what I read was that their, like an artist would upload a song to Blue Box, to their service, and then they would take the splits, and then they would make, they would take 1%, and they would make each 1% like an NFT. And then they would sell that to their fans. What do you think of that?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, in my opinion, you know, all of the existing blockchain or NFT-based streaming platforms basically have the one single problem that people have to upload their music. And so, like, a streaming service where you only have the people who have uploaded their music is kind of a non-starter. I mean, it might be interesting and there might be some fun stuff going on there, but it's not going to actually like compete with Spotify unless it has the full catalog or whatever. And we know that's coming and it's going to be interesting to see how and when that plays out.
Awesome. Yeah. And do you ever think Spotify will ever get into the, do you think Spotify will ever like transition into like a blockchain type model or an NFT type model for their platform?
Well, that's kind of my biggest fear. I think that probably what they're going to do, you know, I think everyone's kind of thinking really small with NFTs right now because they only have the technology as it exists today in their minds, right? Once we start getting into blockchains that can scale, like Phantasma, I mean, it's possible that they could run their entire streaming service on it, for example. Anything could happen, but hopefully they're still thinking small. It'll be interesting to see, because I know, I mean, it was a while ago when Spotify was hiring blockchain developers, and I can only imagine, you know, what they've come up with to try to capture this huge market. I mean, they don't make that much money, right? So, I mean, for a company with that many customers, and we know that there's a disconnect. I mean, that's what NFTs have really revealed, is that there's this huge disconnect between the value that the consumer derives from music or art and what the market has been paying them. And suddenly there's this way to connect the consumer. And I think with music, the gulf is even bigger. I mean, songs have such a huge emotional impact. And so many of the NFTs too that have been trading so far, they're like, like beat makers, and they don't have that like personality to drive them. And then when we see someone like Snoop Dogg or whatever, someone with this really strong, you know, personality behind what it is, it seems like those are going to be the ones that will probably do better than the ones where, you know, there isn't like a big name brand celebrity or whatever behind them.
That's super interesting, because I know at least right now the most successful people that are selling the most successful drops are people that already have fan bases or already have communities, or at least they already have some sort of recognition by society. So in your perspective, how do you see marketplaces like Ghost Market or OpenSea or Rarible or any other ones? How do you think independent musicians can leverage NFTs to benefit themselves and reach the next level in their career?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you know, that's sort of the eternal question, right? Is, you know, how can we, you know, accomplish the goals that we have? And from what I've been hearing, it's like everybody's goal is to blow up, not to make money. I've noticed that, you know, like they want to make this a publicity stunt. They want to come up with some way that this is going to, you know, get in all the papers and everything like that. And there's very few people that are actually taking the, like, I want to make a bunch of money route. And unfortunately, the ones that are, I think, are playing the short game. They're going for the quick cash grab or whatever it is, and not establishing like a catalog. And the people that really have crushed it, you know, they have taken very good care of how they've created their catalog of NFTs, how they've treated their collectors, how they've interacted with their communities, and just in general shown to the collectors that they are going to be working very hard to keep adding value to those NFTs long after that first sale. So, yeah, I mean, it is, I think, actually pretty rare when you see someone who's a big music person who's actually releasing music NFTs. I mean, first of all, you know, we see a lot of big artists, all they want to do is, you know, they want to have basically a glorified social media post as their NFT. And I think that, you know, they're trying to play at the game rather than take it seriously. And I wish that, you know, if an artist like, you know, say Snoop Dogg or whatever would release his songs, you know, routinely, or for example, as an NFT, it could have an enormous impact. And I really can't even imagine what the impact would be if it became, you know, somewhat normal to release an NFT of a song in addition to putting it out on Spotify and all of those types of things.
That's a super interesting point. And I'm also curious to know what you think about the idea of super fans and how people like Snoop Dogg, or I know Don Diablo, he just sold his NFT for, I believe, 1.2 million, which was like about 600 ETH, I think is what he sold it for. But yeah, going back to the question, like how do you think that these types of people with bigger followings and even independent artists that have communities, how can they use NFTs, or like what are some projects or examples or experiences that you've seen of people that you work with or just general in the community? What sort of experiences and projects have you seen music artists do to create a deeper, stronger connection with their fans?
Well, we have some Ghost Market artists that are doing some amazing things, and I think one thing to remember too is that, you know, when you see all these dollar amounts, you know, people might be getting a very small portion of the Ethereum network, whereas, you know, with Phantasma, people are getting a comparatively large portion of the network, or the total number of coins, the whole market cap, you know, even if the dollar amount is smaller, because we're building kind of a new ecosystem there. But some of the things I've seen have been pretty incredible. I mean, we just had actually someone today who got mentioned in the Italian Billboard. I'm not sure if it was a magazine or website. Do magazines even exist anymore? But they had an interview with Billboard in Italy that was Belladonna. And they had this enormous sale. They did so well. And they're an example of someone who, you know, really just had no intention of following the sort of example that I had put out, or whatever the template, you know, like they gave away the rights to the sound recording as part of their NFT, but they kept the publishing rights. So they're a band that often gets things placed in films and that kind of thing. So you would actually get like half of the publishing, or half of the royalties or something like that, should they get it in a film or whatever. A very novel concept. They really worked it out well with a lawyer, and it's great. I love it. You know, they have, I think, taken the NFT game to the next level and that kind of thing. And they've gotten so much press from it. And I mean, I think that's what people want, you know, more than the money, more than anything else. They want to stand out. They want to do something that is new and vital to the community and advance the state of things. And I mean, it's hard to criticize that, you know. I mean, I think that we're just going to kind of end up with two different NFT markets. We're going to have one where it's just, you know, free for all, wild, the stuff that we have now, right? The Rarible, the Ghost Market, all those kinds of things where anybody can come along and anybody can do the craziest, wildest thing and come up with their offer, and maybe it'll hit, maybe it'll miss, whatever. But then we're also going to have, at some point, some kind of standardized offering, right? Where someone just has music NFTs. And my goal with my streaming platform is to hopefully be that, you know, artist-friendly version of that, rather than a sort of nightmare world Spotify version that could very well be in the works.
And how do you see like ownership changing? Because I know blockchain and NFTs, they create a whole new different possibilities of what ownership means, in especially in the music space, especially because of how the record labels have really been crunching down on ownership and really restricting that for a lot of artists in general in the industry. So how are you seeing the difference in ownership change with NFTs with independent artists as well?
That's a very good question, because yeah, that really is where the fight is. And I've definitely been hearing from people that, you know, they have to go toe-to-toe with the industry when they have a big artist that they're working with, to make sure that, you know, they just have a distribution deal or whatever it is, to make sure that they don't give up their masters. Because yeah, I mean, of course that's the, you know, that's the main thing, right? For a label, they want to own the sound recording. And then, you know, once that ownership is gone, you're pretty much at their mercy. I mean, regardless of whatever your contract may say, you know, it all comes down to accounting and how it's done. So, I mean, that is kind of a standard thing. And unfortunately, I mean, once you give up the rights to your master, then it's all over. So hopefully with NFTs, we're creating a way that people can, you know, do that without the record label. I understand that, you know, people who are in that business of helping artists and representing artists, they want to, you know, argue that they are providing a service, you know, that the artists couldn't do themselves. And there is something to that. You know, if you have, say, an 18-year-old rapper who doesn't know anything about business or whatever, but he's like the, you know, greatest talent you've ever seen, I mean, I think we would all benefit if other people can handle all of the business and those kinds of things, and they do it ethically. But at the same time, that's not usually how it is. And the music business has historically been pretty bad. we've seen so many examples, of course, you know, have personal experience with some of those examples. You know, there's just so many things in the music business just end up being very scammy or whatever. And You know, one of them is like royalty advances, for example. You know, we have all these predatory practices where if somebody has royalties coming in, you know, basically these payday lenders or whatever will go in and try to charge them hundreds of percent interest on whatever royalty advances or whatever royalties they might have coming and that kind of thing, or buy their royalties. It's you know, there's just so many different predatory aspects to the music business. And the more we can cut those out, the better. And I mean, it would be nice if we could have one offering. I mean, you know how it is with like say the dairy industry, you know, they have like one symbol, you know, and you know, it's real cheese, right? If it has that symbol and it's not made with, you know, sawdust or something like that. But you know, with music NFTs, there is nothing like that. We have no idea what we're getting into. And I mean, even the most basic things are sort of up for grabs. And at some point, it would be nice if we had something a little bit more standardized so that the consumer, you know, could compare them quickly. You know, I mean, you want to have a shopping experience where if someone's in the mood, they can spend $1 million or whatever, or, you know, buy 30 of them in a minute, no problem, without having to do, you know, volumes of research and even figure out who this person is, or did they even have the right to mint this and that kind of thing.
That's a super interesting point as well. And, do you think we can bring up some people from the audience potentially, if they have any questions for you as well? I think that would be super fun if you have time. Yeah. If anyone in the audience wants to come up, has any questions, feel free to raise your hand. Jesse's here from House of NFT, so definitely if you have any questions, feel free to raise your hand. I think Shanika, I saw your hand raised earlier. Feel free to come up if you have any questions about NFTs or anything regarding the topic as well, and music NFTs at all. Anything. Cool. All right. Cool. I think we have a couple people coming up here. What's up, Andrew? What's up, Phil? How's it going? Welcome to the stage.
Hey, man. Thanks for hosting another great room. And, you know, I really felt what you just touched on earlier about community. And, you know, with the Don Diablo drop, you know, it's an amazing thing for him. He's very passionate about a year's worth of work and holds value to that piece. And, you know, it went for that value. And you know, for his, you know, the rest of the fans, what experience do they get out of that? And nothing really, right? So I really like the aspect of using NFT in a community aspect, awarding your fans and letting them continue to experience things. Yes, you can have different tiers of experiences going to that super fan, but you know, really thinking about creative ways to reward the masses in a way that, you know, that can let them experience NFT and also get the newbies into this crypto space. So I love that you touched on that, and I'm seeing it more and more in this space. So I just wanted to comment on that. Thanks. I'm done speaking.
Thank you. That's very interesting. You know, I have not looked into the Don Diablo thing. We'll have to do that. That does sound very amazing. If you'd like to share the details with that, I'd be interested in hearing about it.
You know, just I was in his room earlier. You know, he put together an hour concert using various, you know, graphics and 3D images, I guess, and stuff like that. So the technology that went into it, as well as the audio, was you know, a long project for him, which held value in terms of what it cost to create that piece, as well as his artistic value. And you know, I was listening to him talk before the drop went live, and he had a kind of a number in his head, which could have been that million plus number. And he was only doing a one for one drop, which, you know, people are saying now, what does, you know, is that owner going to do with that piece? He might have the right to never share it again, right? So it's interesting with these one of ones, what is going to happen to that piece, especially when the artist has a mass following. You know, as a fan, you're like, am I ever going to see, you know, see it, what's you know, gonna happen? So
Well, that's interesting. So this is one of those where you only get to hear it if you're the owner, kind of a thing.
Hear and see it. Yeah, it's a visual concert piece. You know, we've seen 30-second snippets, which I think on, you know, that was part of the plug on Super Rare. I think it had the opening, but yeah, it's a one of one. So
yeah,
we'll have to wait and see.
That, you know, in my opinion, that gets away a little bit from the original idea of the NFT, which is that, you know, everybody can enjoy it, but only one person can own it. You know, if you buy a Beeple or whatever, you're not going to be the only person who gets to see the picture. And, but this is really common. I mean, you know, I worked with Ill Bill on his first drop and all of that. And I mean, the very first thing he wanted to do is he wanted to do it just like Wu-Tang did, where if you don't buy the NFT, you don't get to be the one to hear the song. And actually, I was the one to buy the NFT, and I haven't listened to the song yet. Because on Phantasma, we have this feature where you can see if it's been unlocked. There are a lot of features actually that exist on Phantasma and Ghost Market. Their NFTs are far beyond what are available elsewhere. And one of them is that you can see whether the locked content has ever been unlocked, because it's actually a chain feature. Like on Rarible, the locked content is just on their servers or whatever, and or maybe it's stored by IPFS or whatever. But in any case, it's not part of the Ethereum blockchain or anything like that, right? Locked content doesn't exist on Ethereum. Whereas on Phantasma, the locked content is encrypted on the chain as part of the NFT, as part of the NFT standard.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. Actually, I mean, Ghost Market is pretty advanced. It's you know, the first cross-chain marketplace. And again, I'm not actually affiliated with it. I'm not a developer, but I did kind of help them, you know, just make sure that they were going to serve the music community when they went live with the self-minting and all of that. But no, it's everybody's first inclination now is to like do these like hidden tracks where you're the only person who gets to you know, listen to it. If you know, if you don't, if you're not the one who buys the NFT, you'll never hear the song. That kind of thing, like the Wu-Tang "Once Upon a Time in Shaolin" album. That seems to be just, you know, what people are gravitating towards. And of course, that my idea was that, you know, you would just have this be a one-of-one digital collectible, and you would offer something special, you know, like maybe like a 24-bit master or, you know, something else to make it special. But, you know, you wouldn't stop other people from actually listening to the song.
That's interesting. And, you know, just something else I heard as well. It's been referred to as collectibles, how we used to collect vinyl. And if you play a new piece of vinyl 10,000 times, I think it's going to start wearing out, and it's not going to be like the first time you heard it. So, you know, if an NFT was created with a limited number of plays, that would hold a significant amount of value too. So that was something. Abby, I'm not sure if I heard you talk about that in a room, but that's another good unique play on an NFT, giving it a certain amount of plays and then it's done forever.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I mean, everyone's coming up with these amazing you know, ideas, and I guess, you know, publicity stunts, really, let's be honest. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with it being a publicity stunt. If I was just playing my guitar on the street, if I was busking or whatever, you know, just trying to get some money in my guitar case, I'd still be trying to create hype around what it is that I'm doing. I mean, let's just be honest. That's what we do in the music industry, right? So, of course, we're going to do that when it comes to NFTs. And so, I mean, any sort of novel approach like that, yeah, people are going to want to go to that. They're going to want to be the first one to do it if they come up with it. And we've seen so much already. And actually, Phantasma is a very fertile playground for things like that, because there are just features like the being able to infuse one NFT into another. And actually, when you're talking about the number of plays, I don't know if you could, how you do that with the number of plays, but you can have like timed NFTs that self-destruct. I mean, there are all these different things that you can do, but the infused NFTs are incredible. We should have Kind Mantras talk about what he did with his. He created this magical sandwich where you can, you know, you could have, we had one person create one where in order to get to the next track, you'd have to burn the first one. So like the first track, you'd have to burn that to get to the second track, and then you have to burn the second track to get to the third track, and so forth. Or you can create like each track as its own NFT and then create a single container NFT that represents the album and then infuse all of those tracks into it. And so the person that buys it can choose to keep it as a single NFT or to split it into the individual tracks and sell those as individual NFTs.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, this is revolutionary. It's fun, right? So a lot more that we're going to see out of this space, I'm sure, very, very quickly. Thank you. It's a great room. I'm done.
Yeah,
thanks.
Thank you, Andrew. Yeah, great talking to you.
Hey, Jesse, I had a really quick question for you. I don't want to take up too much space. I know there's a lot of questions I'm sure want to be asked, but I'm curious, you know, being someone that's so familiar with the space, what are you most excited about within NFTs?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, there's sort of like, to me, there's sort of like two different battles going on. There's, on the one hand, there's the battle to kind of get everyone to be involved in the space as it is now, right? But then there's the sort of battle to, you know, battle over what it's going to look like 6 months from now. And I'm not sure which is more exciting, really, because, you know, to a certain extent, we don't know what people are planning 6 months from now. We only know what we're planning, and you know, maybe we have inklings of what they're talking about. But yeah, I mean, to me, probably the most exciting battle is just, you know, probably in the consumer space, right? Because if this becomes something where the average, you know, retail investor type person is buying these, it can generate literally billions of dollars for musicians. And that's really, you know, to me, that's the only thing that I really care about. I mean, when I hear these big artists making a lot of money, I think it's great, but really only to the extent that, you know, it's hopefully going to get more of the little people involved, because they already have tons of money. You know, I'm not really concerned about them making more money, but, you know, if we can have some kind of transformation in the way music works, where the average person, the average kid grows up in a world thinking like, man, I could make a bunch of money from music. You know, I want to go into music instead of, you know, whatever it is, some corporate job or whatever that, you know, they have to settle for. If they actually know that there really is a path, if they get that song done, they get that NFT out, they're going to be able to not have to work a minimum wage job or, you know, going to crime or whatever it is. I mean, let's face it, look how people have financed their music careers. It hasn't, you know, been a good thing for a lot of vulnerable populations. And so, I mean, that transformation is the one that I care about, the mass market transformation, and transforming the mass market consumer into a buyer of NFTs. That's really the place that I'm watching, I guess.
Hey, could I jump in?
Go ahead, Phil.
Thank you. I appreciate this room, because I've had a 30-year career in the music business through major label deals, independent record deals, publishing deals, doing it completely as an independent artist now. And I've been thinking about this space recently and trying to come up with ideas on how we might approach our audience with it and also other collectors, because I think there's two different, it seems to me there's two different tiers of potential buyers. In my audience, some of whom have been with me for the entirety of my career, I think there's going to be a steep learning curve on this for them, just to even get them educated on crypto in the first place. I mean, I'm playing catch up on that. You know, I'm of a generation that certainly is not as familiar I'm making myself more familiar with it. But I think we've got a couple of interesting ideas as far as bringing people to through the creative process of a song, all the different digital records of a particular song, that, you know, from an iPhone demo all the way up through the final master. One other question that I have is about, in my mind, the to attach an NFT to a finished master of a song, you're kind of then creating what used to be like the two-track master in the old days and in the analog days, which the record company would own and also have the rights to reproduce it. So am I right in sort of thinking about it this way, that if you attach an NFT to a master recording, you're kind of then saying that this is the digital original of this piece of music, and you can sell that, but still retain the rights to distribute it and reproduce it? That would be one thing that I'm just kind of, as a concept, that I can share with my audience about what this might be. And then secondly, you know, this concept of attaching physical items to an NFT that as part of the drop, where you get the original demo, you've got photographs from the session, you've got the final master, you've got, you know, various pieces of the song as it's being created. Is that something that you think would work in this space?
Well, we're all trying to figure out what's going to work. I actually bought one recently where it was just the stems of a song, and I'm going to have fun playing around with it when I haven't had a chance to break it open yet. But yeah, I mean, people are doing all kinds of things, but even though it's the stems and they call it the remix pack, you know, it doesn't come with any rights. And if I did create a remix, if I wanted to do something commercial with it, I would have to negotiate that separately. And that's always my advice. Again, this is not legal or financial advice, but you know, and also I'm speaking from the United States, just to be clear, and I know for a fact that the laws are different in other places, but what I recommend is to always put the copyright notice in the description, because that indicates that you are retaining the rights. And remember, there are two different copyrights, at least in the United States. There's the sound recording copyright, and then there's the underlying musical composition. And so I would put both of those copyrights in there, like both symbols, and just make sure that you don't give that away. Because if you don't put in the copyright symbol, you wouldn't necessarily be giving away the rights, but if the person were to distribute it or do something like that, if they were to say, I thought if I bought the NFT, I was allowed to use this in my movie without compensating you or whatever, then, and we've had cases like that where, you know, someone actually, I just heard about this, but someone from an HBO series or something wanted to use a song, and they thought if they bought the NFT that would give them the right to do whatever they wanted with that song. And so if you don't have that copyright notice in there, then, you know, you wouldn't probably get any damages. You know, maybe the court could tell them to stop, but they could say they were an innocent infringer, according to the attorney that I actually hired to look into this stuff. So, yeah, I do always recommend the copyright symbol, retaining your rights, and don't give away the rights to your master. I mean, I realize that, yeah, you know, people are going to try to do these kinds of publicity stunt types of things, or, you know, just something to make their NFT special, and giving away the rights or some portion of the rights, it's, you know, very attractive to a lot of people. But I feel like we should stick to the idea that the standard and the expected practice is that the artist retains their rights to their master.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me, and I'm really glad you said that, because I haven't heard that before, the idea of really expressing that you are keeping the distribution and reproduction rights. The other question I wanted to ask, if I could, is just about, you know, I mean, everybody wants to make money, obviously, and those of us have been in the music business and been through these kind of deals that you were, Jesse, talking about. I mean, you know, let's remember, the music business was basically created by criminals to exploit artists.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, that's just the way it is, and I've been in it a long time, so I'm, you know, aware of that. If you go back to through the music history, artists have been taken advantage of since day one. So this is an incredible opportunity for artists to level the playing field a little bit, and there is a lot of interest in trying to make that big score, like you were talking about earlier. Everything that I've heard in that, I mean, I don't think my audience is going to drop a million. Somebody in my audience, and it's possible, I don't really know personally the financial position of everybody in my audience, but I'm assuming that that's not where they're at. But there are some, you know, whale collectors out there, and everything that I've heard is trying to make relationships with collectors is an important part of this process. Can you expound on that a little bit?
That's absolutely correct. And I don't think any of these big artists, obviously, if you're someone who's already a household name, if, you know, Kanye West decides to drop an NFT, we already know it's going to go for, you know, an enormous sum of money. But for most other people, even Beeple or whatever, they had to start selling things for pretty low prices, right? And it was only once collectors had an established track record and saw that the creators were, you know, reliably promoting their NFTs and engaging with collectors and doing all the things that, you know, help the value increase and that kind of thing. And, you know, just sometimes just being lucky, getting the right breaks or whatever. But, you know, once that track record was established that this person's NFTs are going to go up in value, you know, then I think that's the only time people start, you know, paying into the millions. And unfortunately, that's had a very bad effect, because, I mean, the whole point of what I'm doing is trying to help the people who are not benefiting from that. And instead, you have the same people just benefiting more and more and more. It's just like, oh, Blau has more NFTs, or Beeple sold more NFTs. And it's like, okay, great. But I was hoping that we could help the masses, right? Like everybody. And that's kind of why I, you know, believe in what we're doing with Ghost Market and Phantasma, because right now still Sol, which has under 100 million coins in circulation and only 3% inflation compared to Ethereum's much higher inflation, and plus the fees are almost non-existent and the NFTs are better. So even if you get a little sale, right, you might be getting 100 or 200 or 1,000 or 10,000 even. I don't know. Maybe that's a little far-fetched now. But, you know, depending on what level you're at, you know, you might be getting this enormous amount of Sol compared to the amount of Ethereum that you get. And so if we all actually were to work together collectively, you know, we could actually do something pretty insane with the price of Sol if we made that the place for music.
Appreciate all the information. Thank you so much. I'm done.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you asking, and I would love to hear more. It sounds like you have a lot of expertise. And actually, what you were saying about, you know, the history of the music industry, my dad played with, you know, Clyde Stubblefield. He was in Clyde Stubblefield's band. He was a bass player with him for over a decade. And, you know, everyone, I think, knows his story. Most sampled drummer in history. Never made a cent from all that. So that's kind of been, you know, the impetus for me always thinking about this issue for so many years. And then when I finally had the chance to do a startup, of course, that was the problem I wanted to solve.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Because, yeah, as a drummer myself, I mean, I'm well aware of that. A lot of the great musicians who made some of the most legendary records, been a part of some of the most iconic music in music history, haven't really been compensated beyond the original session that maybe took place in 1960, where they made, you know, $150, and then the record went on to make millions and millions of dollars. So yeah, there's a long time equity problem in music that used to be solved by giving an artist a Cadillac or you know, a small bonus, and you'd find artists ending up penniless while the record company made millions. So you know, that, I mean, that's just the sad truth of the music business, that would be great if we could, you know, level the playing field and really compensate artists for their work in the long run.
Absolutely. I could not have said that better myself.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Shekinah. Yeah, I don't necessarily have a question, but I wanted to just kind of go back to something that Jesse was talking about earlier, and, you know, just kind of, I don't know, just give some caution or just provide, you know, more clarification. But with the, like, I know he was mentioning putting, you know, the copyright symbol, you know, on your work when you're doing like NFTs. And what I wanted to say, you know, and make sure just some of you like understood that there's a common law, you know, like copyright, where, you know, you could do that, you know, as soon as you create something, it's you automatically, you know, inherit that right, you know, to own it. However, then there's the federal, you know, copyright, you know, that's where you register. And it's where it's with the federal copyright where you have access to, you know, to the courts and to, you know, damages, you know, like basically money when someone infringes upon it. And in the U.S., you know, the copyright law, you know, says in order for you to initiate, you know, a copyright infringement suit, you have to have had it registered with the Copyright Office. So, you know, I would just say, you know, for the artists that are out there, just, you know, copyright your compositions. You know, if you're a choreographer, that's also something you can copyright. Copyright your artwork, and, you know, trademark, you know, your whatever names, you know, that you guys are using, you know, as well, if there's been some sales behind it. But definitely just always remember, and I think we were just discussing this in the last conversation, you know, intellectual property is the best asset, you know, because it's that's where you're licensing, you know, your art or your work, you know, to corporations and to who else wants to use it. And that can definitely be a really good income stream. So I just wanted to add that. Thank you.
Thank you, Shekinah. Wow. Yes. Obviously, copyright registration. That is huge because, I mean, like you said, yeah, if you are actually going to enforce your rights, you do have to have it registered. So you might as well. And I mean, it gives you like basically the assumption that you've won the case if you have it registered. You know, it's pretty difficult for someone to prove the other way if once you've, you know, actually got it registered. So, you know, if you don't want to go through the hassle, it's the way to go. And yeah, intellectual property, I mean, that's everything. That's all we have. I mean, that's our whole stock and trade if we're musicians, and the more we protect that, the better. I really appreciate that point.
Hey, Jesse, this is Daniel. Sorry. And Abby.
Sorry, Daniel, before you go.
I have one quick thing. Okay, go ahead. You go,
and I just want to give Grand Wu the floor. If we just PTR real quick, I know he's been waiting up here. So if he can go, and then Crescent, and then Daniel. What's up, Grand Wu? How's it going? Grand Wu, are you here? Maybe he got a call. But yeah, Kristen, are you here as well?
Yeah, thanks. I'm trying to form a specific question around this, but I'm just feeling like I haven't ever chimed in on any of this, but I'm, you know, attending the whole weekend and listening to you guys. So I'm a musician, entrepreneur, and I'm actually currently building out a company for NFT structures on music stems with smart contracts attached for payouts. And so my goal is, you know, of course, just to have musicians automatically paid out regardless of the licensing placement and be able to, like, track it better and have royalty structures in place. So, you know, I'm working with a few entertainment lawyers and label execs and all that, and I guess I wanted to just pose that question to the room because, you know, as a non-technical founder, I'm looking to build out my team. And so I'm curious, I don't know if this is too far off topic, but, you know, looking for different types of coders, different types of NFT, you know, experts and all that. So because there's like four or five moving parts that I hear Jesse talking about, and I'm looking to streamline all of it. So I just wanted to pose that kind of general level and just hear if anyone had any feedback or thoughts. Thanks.
Well, that sounds very interesting. I mean, I think the first probably choice that you would face is, you know, your choice of blockchain and that kind of thing. And if I could just put in another plug for Phantasma, I don't know exactly what type of platform you're trying to do. But I mean, if you look at Ethereum, you've got the entire world trying to fight for 10 transactions per second, right? And that's why the fees are so high, because you have to pay those miners who are, you know, devastating the environment or whatever with their Ethereum mining and all that stuff. And that's literally what you're paying for, is all that electricity and replacing the servers and liquid cooling the servers and all those things that are bad for the environment, versus Phantasma, where we've got, you know, the proof of stake and all of that. And the entire consumption of the network is probably equal to maybe a dorm wing at a university or something. Instead of like Ethereum, the network requires the same amount of electricity as the country of Iceland. So, and that's for 10 transactions per second. On Phantasma, you got 5,000 transactions per second. You know, it programmatically only costs you like a tenth of a cent or something to create an NFT. So the types of things that you'd be able to do with your startup, and I'm working with a number of startups actually who are building on Phantasma, and I've had to help talk to their development teams, and I'd be happy to put you in touch with the development people with Phantasma. But yeah, I mean, the types of things that you could do would just be vastly accelerated if you were to choose, you know, like a next generation blockchain.
Yeah, thanks. Second question, I don't know if this is appropriate to ask, but I've been suggested to actually do my funding round on crypto rather than do a traditional VC round. Does anyone have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm going through that right now. I mean, you obviously have to avoid the U.S. You can't take money from anyone inside the U.S. and that kind of thing. You'd have to look into all that. But yeah, I mean, it's sort of a trade-off. You can probably do it really quickly if you go offshore and that kind of a thing. But then, you know, the music industry is here. So, yeah, you've got a bit of a chicken and egg problem there with the ICO thing, because an ICO is a big no-no here in the United States unless you have SEC approval, and it literally takes years. There are so many horror stories of people. I just heard this one where these people 2 years ago, they started a project, they put in all their own money, all their own Bitcoin, they just lost everything, and by the time they finally actually did get approval from the SEC, their idea was completely obsolete, and they, you know, just basically lost everything.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Well, Daniel, I think...
Cool. Thanks, guys. Yeah, and first of all, sorry for interrupting earlier. I didn't realize who had gone because I just kind of jumped in. So, but thanks for having this room, Abhi and Jesse. I just wanted to add one thing, which was I saw some legalese on the SNL NFT on OpenSea that I copied and pasted into a notepad because I'm going to use that in the future. It was really extensive and on what the copyright was. It was like, you cannot use this for anything, basically. So if people are looking for maybe just a quick and easy way of retaining their rights on the content, they could go to OpenSea and go look for that SNL what is an NFT skit, and in the description of that NFT, it's like their legal team wrote it. So you could, kind of repurpose that if you were interested. I think it was a great thing. So check that out. And that's really all I wanted to add because we were on that topic earlier.
Well, thank you. That's very interesting. I'm always looking for good examples of NFT legalese. And I'm sure they have really good lawyers. So
exactly. Exactly.
Much better than my my Des Moines law firm or whatever here. But actually, speaking of lawyers, I did actually get one issue resolved, and I haven't even made a video about this, so this might be breaking news. But not really, because I kind of figured this out already just from talking to publishing companies. But the whole issue of cover songs. Now, this is really gets to the heart of everything, because you have so many situations with music where the person who wrote the song is different from the person who owns the sound recording. Or whoever owns the rights are different people. And so in order to do that, you normally have to clear the copyright, right? And with the case of CDs or whatever, or digital downloads, you could just go to the, songfile.com, Harry Fox Agency, or whatever it is, and you pay, it's literally like, last time I did it, it was like 9 cents, or if you do it through DistroKid or whatever, you can check this little like cover song box, and they'll take care of it all for you, and it's really cheap. I mean, it's really, really cheap. But with a one-of-one NFT, are you going to be able to pay 9 cents, to cover a song that you sell for a lot of money? Probably not, but we don't know. So I had this lawyer look into it for me for quite a while, and they came back and basically said, there is no law made on this. Like, you can try it if you want, but if you make a bunch of money, you are most likely going to get sued. And that's actually the same thing I heard from a publishing company. And they said, yeah, well, the first person who makes $100,000 and tries to pay us 9 cents for that one-of-one NFT is going to get sued. So there you have it. I mean, chances are, if you try to get away with doing royalties the normal way, you are likely going to get sued, and you might get away with it or you might not. It is unsettled law.
Awesome. Well, I just want to thank you once again, Jesse. I know the room. We've come to the end of the room, and I just want to thank you once again for coming on and being a part of the community and sharing your perspective on the future of NFTs.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you having me. And I should point out houseofnft.com, probably for only another day or two, we still have the free KCal and Sol. So if you want to mint an NFT at ghostmarket.io, then you can actually do it for free.
Awesome. Also, thank you so much to everyone who came up and asked a question, and to everyone who was listening in the audience. Hopefully everyone has a good day, and I'll see everyone in the hallway. Take care, everyone, and we're about to start the next portion of the conference as well.
Thank you.